Hey, welcome to The Screenwriting Life. I'm Meg LaFauve.
And I'm Lorianne McKenna.
We are professional screenwriters. We've worked together as a team and separately. We've worked on studio and indie films, live action and animation, from my work on Inside Out and Captain Marvel.
To my work in Pixar's story department on Up, Brave, and Inside Out. We are here to share our insights on the craft of screenwriting and also the life. How to not only survive the ups and downs, but thrive. We want to help you become the best screenwriter you can be and to reassure you that you are not alone on this journey.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Today we are chatting with a feature writer who has credits on 6 major studio releases in just the last 2.5 years alone, Matt Lieberman.
So Matt is a master of high concept features stemming from both original ideas and IP. Matt's films have made a splash in multiple quadrants, from beloved family fare like Netflix's modern holiday classic, The Christmas Chronicles. Wow, that just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? To the Ryan Reynolds-led action comedy Free Guy, which is currently in theaters.
And Matt is joining us today to discuss the all-important art of turning our wild ideas into sellable pitches. So welcome.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Yes, Matt, welcome. And before we get to the interview part, let's get to our week. So what we like to call adventures in screenwriting. I'll start. I ran away to Palm Springs this week with my family to work from there. And I'm in post on my TV show. And that's what I'm doing right now. And I am trying to jot down the ideas I have because, you know, when you're working on one thing, you have a billion exciting ideas about all the potential new things you could be working on. So I've been trying to write those down because they all sound like genius ideas right now. And then I'm just, you know, going through post. It's great. I love it. It's super fun. I'm learning a lot. And that's what I'm doing.
Matt, how was your week?
It's been good, but a little challenging, I guess. End of summer, everything picking back up into the school year for my daughter. And I've been working on the script basically the summer, like the whole summer that I've been like, I feel like I've been on the 5-yard line for like the last 3 weeks.
Is that close? Is the 5-yard line close?
Yeah, that's why I was pausing. I shouldn't be using sports metaphors. So close. It feels like I'm so close. It feels like I have like a half day of work left for the last 3 weeks. And I've been in this place before, especially with a story like this, which I guess, you know, it's just about a family when you have 2 parents, 2 kids. Those are really tough stories. And I always hit this issue at the end of Act Two. I don't know why. It's just you're having to make all the arcs land and, you know, have momentum going to Act Three. So I've been like toying, and usually it's an Act One problem.
Yes, it is. God help us.
Yeah, that beautiful Act One that, you know, seems perfect when you do it.
I'm right there with you for my week. I'm very grumpy today because my anxiety has turned to rage just at the process of how hard it is. I am in the same place. I have been working with a partner on a project. And through, if you look at when we first started to pitch to get the job through to now, I'd say we've done 10, 12, 15 arcs for this character. And everything around that arc is working and fun. And we have great ideas, you know, all the side characters, blah, 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 blah. But we just can't get it to line up in terms of the front, first act, third act. What you're talking about, like that first act, end of second act and third act, those pulls of her character being like so super clear. I'm going to say we're dummy proof because I don't even know how, it has to be so clear. And I like nuance. That's, I don't know what to say. Yeah. Everything I come up is very nuanced. And I find it super frustrating. It's like having a Rubik's cube. Like I will get the first act. That totally works. This could be the end of Act Three. And then the end of Act Two, you're like, that doesn't work at all. And then we get the end of Act Two and the third act. And now that first act, we don't like her. We just totally don't like that character. So that doesn't work. It's really, really, it's tricky. It's super, you know, those poles of the character, they can sometimes be the last thing you get, right? Like you can do many, many drafts until they finally click in. And I'm just trying to do it all up front. And hand it to the studio and be like, here's the scaffolding to go hang the fun on. And it's it's not easy stuff, because I don't know if you find this, Matt, but if the studio and you and the producers and everybody want a character who's truly changing, i.e. transforming, that means there was something up front that needed to change. Let's call it the flaw. I don't care what you call it, but right. And sure. Yet you have to love them, and you have to not see the flaw as too big of a flaw, or you don't love them. It's really, to me, if that character is somehow being victimized, it's much easier, right? Because right. Then that's what you're fighting against, and it's them claiming their power. But if it's truly their issue, it's hard to make them likable. Anyways, this right. is, I won't go down this black hole, because it will just go on and on. And maybe Matt, you can help us later. But
yeah, hey, anytime. Yeah.
Like, this is something that doesn't feel odd, right? This is a recognizable thing where you guys have both gotten writing features. So how do you push through?
Oh, I mean, I've literally created videos to myself being like, Matt, this is going to be okay. You're going to get through this problem. And then I look at the video and I'm like, that Matt knows nothing. It never gets easier. You just have to persevere. And I just have to give myself a deadline. I think it was, some musician was like, I never stop making an album. I just run out of money. Mm, and that's yeah. kind of like, at some point you just gotta be like, okay,
this is it.
Yeah.
So I guess it's like, how do you hold on to that hope and the belief that Matt did know what he was talking about?
Well, right? That was right. I always do. And that, I mean, that's why we do this, is like, you know, have like this, I mean, we're you know, screenwriters, you know, in the dramatic arts. So I guess we're probably, my friend recently told me we're dramatic ourselves.
How dare you? How dare you?
So like, and that is the fun, is like cracking it and like waking up in the middle of the night being like, this is it. And then having that afternoon that it feels like I'm just going to have, and like bowing through it. And like, I think, I mean, the work is like kind of knowing what the problem is before you hand it, I think.
Knowing the note yeah. you're going to get.
So what's your advice around that? Like, you are struggling. Would you ever go to your producer or your whomever and say, here's the problem. Here are all the things I've tried. And I'm stuck. Was that something that you would ever recommend doing?
No, I never want to ever turn in something with a qualifier. I would figure it out myself. I would figure it out. I would go to other writer friends, you know, help crack it, take a break from it, look at it again. I mean, I've never really had like such a problem where I was like, ugh. I mean, it usually stems from overthinking it too, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I suffer from that.
Yeah. I turn it together to the writer friend, and then they go, yeah, you're fine. You just need to make this tweak. And you're like, oh, okay, good. I just am so into the woods, I can't see it.
I mean, that's a consistent thing we talk about all the time. Like, make sure you have those writer friends that you trust who you can bring the problem to.
Yeah. I mean, there are producers, if you're lucky enough, who are really great with story and can, like, I had a producer once who in the carding stage, she was like, just come over to my house. And we laid them all on our dining room table, which was great. Because if you're going to get our notes anyways, you might as well get them right now. And I'm not saying we figured it out that day, but I could see it helped. But there's other producers or execs who really, that's not their strong point. It's not, they really want you to figure it out, and they might have suggestions, but they don't want to work it all out with you. They don't want to like go through all the A's and B's and explain, you know, here you're overthinking right. of why it doesn't work.
Exactly.
So I have a question about, you said earlier, Matt, that writing a family story with two parents and two kids is really hard. Why?
Kind of like what Meg was saying, like you need to establish, any executive that you turn one of these stories into wants all four of them have an arc. But the best versions of these movies, like, I don't know, Incredibles, Mitchell versus Machines, yes, everybody has an arc, but like it really is about, usually the best ones for me are focus on a relationship between two of the characters in the family. And then the other two fill it out. So it's really about balance. So you have to find out, you know, who's your protagonist in the family? You know, who is it really? And it's maybe not always who you think it is. And yeah, what's like the, what's the crucial relationship, you know, that's driving the story? But, you know, also giving those other two characters, whether it's like the two kids or a kid that's a dad, and giving them all their due.
How is a family story that requires everyone to arc different or the same to an ensemble?
That's a good question. I've written ensembles. I mean, ensembles usually to me are, I mean, you pretty clearly have, in the ones I've done at least, I pretty clearly have my protagonist and, you know, and maybe my number two. And there's, yeah, I mean, they're just also four people who usually haven't lived together and grown up together. And like the stakes of that, I mean, they, you never want to have a movie about a family where the stakes are just like, you're like, they'll figure it out. Like if this never happened, work through it. But then if the, you have like, they're about to get a divorce and you know, the kid's going to run away. Like you will get a note like, whoa, hey, this is, you know, this is too dark. This is not likable. Like, so it's a balancing act. And you know, my hat's off to the movies with, that do it well. It's definitely a specific kind of genre in itself.
Yeah, but what you say about stakes, I know when I was a producer, we called it the get on the bus stakes, where you're like, you know what, if the character just goes, you know what, I think I'm done, and they go get on a bus and go away, the movie's over. Like they can't, you can't be able to get on a bus and just get out of the movie, right? Like that, the stakes have to lock in the character. So but yet those stakes can't be too, if you're doing a big studio movie or the tone, it can't be too dark or too real or too, I can do those dark real stakes in like 2 seconds, but that's, it's tricky, right? Because then the tone issue just comes raging in. And then, you know, we'd love to talk to you about the high concept ideas just in general. You know, listen, we'd love a course on high concept ideas from you. You're such a genius at it in terms of where they come from. What even is it to you? What is a high concept idea to you?
I mean, I was thinking about that today, you know, thinking about this, you know, the show. And because I, the reason why I think it's a good thing to talk about is I don't think it gets talked about a lot. And I think aspiring writers that come to me with problems, it seems like, you know, one that everybody doesn't fully understand, and even like, you know, established writers don't fully understand. And if you look it up, like what's a high concept, you know, some, it's different definitions to a lot of people. It's something that makes you think, it's something, you know, with big stakes. I feel like it's like, for me, like the gold standard of a high concept is an idea that's not execution dependent. That's what I kind of boiled it down to. Like that's an idea that you go, that's a great idea. The second you hear it, you could pitch it very easily in a line or two. There's something ironic about it. There's something big and wish fulfilling about it. And you just get it. And the idea is important. And I've had, writers that come to me and they're like, okay, I have an idea. Like I've even given them the spiel and they go, okay, sure. Like this movie's about ducks. And I'm like, ducks is not a movie. Like ducks are characters in a movie. Sure, and I should qualify this by saying, like, look, if you have a story in your heart and
about ducks,
you want to tell about ducks or whatever, you should write that story. You should sit down. Do not, you know, this is just another way to look at things. This is not the only way to, you know, the only kind of screenplay that you're going to sell. But like in a industry where there's a lot of hurdles, a good idea cuts clean through. If somebody aspiring screenwriter comes to me and it's a good idea, I get engaged and I want to help them. It's not like, I got to help this person, you know, figure out something. Like, oh, this is a good idea. I feel comfortable giving it to my manager. If I have a great idea, you know, I run it by my manager always. And, you know, he'll know if it sells or not. And that, you know, it cuts through the noise.
What are some examples of good high concept movies or ideas, you know, that have been done that we can sort of reference? Like, and how do you think that one line, that click of, oh, wow, this is a high concept, was sort of talked about or sold in the room?
Right. Great question. And I made a list. I mean, the way I think it was put to me once, it was just like, okay, so I dub everybody listening to this right now, like a movie exec, and you have like a busy day and your job is to like come up with a slate of great movies that make a lot of money. And you got 50 things going on at once, and two execs come into your office, and one says, I have this script. It's this heartfelt story about a woman, you know, who has whatever coming of age. It's great. It's like it's a wonderful screenplay. And then someone else comes in and goes like, I have a script. It's Jim Carrey is God for a week. Like, you know, that script that you may pass may win the Oscar for best picture. But it, you know, you go, okay, I see, you know, oh, somebody's God for a week. They have the powers of God. They, you know, I could plug if Jim Carrey, you know, that's a little dated, but like if he's not available, there's five people I could plug into that movie and do something. And even if that script isn't good, I have a stable of writers that I trust, but I could have rewrite that in a second. Mm. And that is really what, you know, that is what it boils down to. I mean, I have a list of ones I like, just ones that I like Truman Show, Matrix, Speed, Jumanji. And Jumanji is interesting because, you know, that's the other part of this is, let's say you're a screenwriter and you get an open writing assignment, or, you know, somebody's like, hey, I want you to develop this, whether it's something like Scooby-Doo, like which everybody's heard of, or something no one's heard of. My first question is always, what's the big idea? Like, what is the idea that's going to get me to see this if I've never heard of this thing? Because look, Jumanji, that was a movie however many years ago. No one cares about that IP necessarily, but it's the new movie worked because it's like a new take on a body swap movie. It's a body swap movie that we've never seen before, where like a nerd, a jock, a brain, a popular kid, they all switch in like the worst, you know, some wish fulfilling versions of their bodies, some in the last thing that they want to be in, so they learn a lesson. Like, I get it. Get that. I don't care what it's called. That's funny. I could put it in The Rock, Kevin Hart, whoever. That movie will work. But you know, that also applies to indie movies. I think, I was looking at Pi. That's great. Eternal Sunshine, all the Charlie Kaufman movies. Buried, another, you know, Ryan Reynolds in a coffin. The whole movie, like, that's a high concept. Like, a movie that takes place entirely in a coffin. I'm going to go at least say, like, well, I want to look at that. How does that work?
Part of it is as much about that the high concept is baked into the movie and the story, but it's also how to take what you have and be able to phrase it in a way that is appealing to an executive, how to pitch your story.
The better the idea, the easier it is to do that, I think.
Right. Yeah, high concept is a log line. Like he literally said one sentence, you know, Jim Carrey is God for a week. You're like, got it. One sentence. I got it. Okay. And it's very plot versus the other one. You can pitch really well, but if the executive's like, well, if you write it as well as you pitched it, maybe. Like, I totally hear what you're saying. If it doesn't matter how well you pitch it. If it depends on how well you execute it, that's not high concept because they can't hand that to anybody. It seems to me, in thinking about it and listening to you, there is a very strong plot element to it.
Yes, that's
a great point. It really is a concept where the plot and the character are so essential and intertwined to the concept that when you pitch that sentence, right? I kind of know when a guy gets to be God for a week, I kind of know what his arcs might be.
Jim Carrey's roles are a jerk becomes enlightened to not be a jerk anymore, right? That is has been his thematic in the past, right? When he was making it like Liar Liar and The Yes Man, they were all about like, so when you say Jim Carrey, you get not just the tone, but the plot, right?
It's why you use actors because they get you that shorthand really fast.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, the best one, like the sweet spot, like when I'm like, this is a great idea, is like if there's an organic thematic baked into the idea. It's about something. Groundhog's Day is about something. And you don't have to nobody's talking about like Buddhism in that movie, but you know, it is about
I mean, it's about a lot of things, and that's baked into that character's, you know, redemption or journey or whatever. And that's the sweet spot, because for me, I could build out characters. I could have the anti-theme character who's kind of, you know, that you could ironically pair with your protagonist.
Well, I was going to sort of dig into, there's this idea that, like what you were saying about, that there's an organic thematic in there. I think there's this perception that high concept means just, I say that like broad entertainment. Whereas if you take like an indie movie, it's more like you can explore emotions or the lava, as we talk about, but it feels like you have to be able to put all that personal writing lava into the big, broad, high concept as well. So how do you balance that, if that's something you think about?
Yeah, I feel like even quote unquote smaller stories or like indie dramas, like there is an idea around there. The ones that you kind of, you know, classic books that you even think of, Dostoevsky, like Ibsen, like there's ghosts in them. Like they, when you really like look at it and drill down, there are like these kind of bigger heightened concepts in those smaller stories. I mean, yeah, that's why I like Yapai. I mean, that it's like about a guy who's, you know, boiling life down to like math. What do you call that? Mathematical
equations.
Equations. Thank you.
Okay. Math. Any kind of math is hard. Story math, math.
I can't even talk.
Talk about math. Math and sports. Okay, I think we're done now. We've covered all the other topics in the world. We can just focus on writing.
I really think that it's actually, a lot of people poo-poo genre, like, oh, it's so easy and indie film is much harder. And I'm like, actually, often genre is much harder because you have to do all that emotional, lava, deep work, relationship work within a genre. And by the way, have trailer moments and set pieces that are still thematic, and you have a limited structure. And if you're going to break that structure, you better know what the structure is before you break it. Like, I actually think the writers who are doing that high level genre work are some of the best writers, because it's super hard. It's super hard. Totally. That's just my so little hard. Speech right there. So where do you come up with your ideas? Where are they coming from?
I mean, for me, I like literally go kind of what Lorian was saying at the top of the episode. I go into like idea mode. I like, it is a mode. I'm not the kind of person who just like wakes up in the middle of the night and like taps it into notes on my iPhone. The couple times I've done that, I mean, I can't even understand what I write. It doesn't even make, I'm like, this is genius. And then I'm like,
it's like the candle by the door.
Yeah.
You're like, what about the candle by the door? What was I thinking?
Yeah, it never, I mean, I have like had eureka moments, but it usually comes from setting out and saying like, I need to think of an idea. And that, you know, includes absorbing things, absorbing new material, taking in things, thinking about things that I love in the world, like coming up with an idea list, sitting down, writing down the ideas, like getting my brain kind of in the mode of thinking up a new idea. I mean, it's how I started, you know, when I was just struggling writer trying to, you know, writing specs. It's just like, I knew that would, you know, cut through the query letter, cut through the noise, like that's what would get attention. So
what do you mean it would cut through the noise? It would cut through the query letter. Do you mean like having a great idea?
Yeah.
Like the high concept.
Exactly. Like an idea that would get me excited, that would probably get other people excited. And you know, I kind of still just search for those ideas. I mean, that's how Free Guy, this movie that just came out. That's what it was. I was feeling stuck in my life, and I had this idea. Like it was a what if idea. Like, what if you could walk around the streets and like see little power ups, you know, that would give you money or health or, you know, little superpowers. Okay, that's funny. Well, then you'd be like kind of a background guy in like a Grand Theft Auto game. And I was like, boom, I knew it right then. That's a great idea. And I pitched it to my manager. He's like, let's go. And I wrote it in like 3 weeks. I mean, yeah, people, I think that there is a misconception that specs don't sell. Spec scripts sell. Like they absolutely do. And as a writer, I think you should be coming up with your own ideas. I mean, open writing assignments, like that's a hustle of its own, and we all, you know, all do it. But like, in order to kind of
work on your own voice and show who you are as an artist and a filmmaker. I think it is important to have your own ideas. Like, and I, you know, when I'm writing my big assignment, I'm doing my own at night. Like, I'm kind of like my own little side thing, and it feels special and it feels like mine, and nobody's giving you notes. Nobody, you're not worried about anybody looking at it. You're just doing right. it.
And when you say spec cell, I just want to clarify these high concept spec cell. Sure. That's, you know, the background guy in a game is starting to move into the high concept, right? In terms of, you know, that sparkly sizzle. So that's, those for sure can sell. Again, if you're doing the coming of age with my grandma on the lake, harder spec sale, right? Yeah. Just harder, less audiences, less buyers for that. Do it. I agree with you. Write it. Please write it. But also try your hand at some bigger ideas and flood all of that great character work into a bigger genre engine for that idea. You said you were stuck in your life. Like, it, the whole way you started your idea was a personal human experience. And then you matched it with this high concept idea.
Totally. And yeah. And I mean, even in the, it's still in the movie, like I would wake up, I would open the shade, I'd walk the dog. I'm a cartoon character. I'm like, live a very routine life. And I was just like, what is this? It's like, I've programmed myself. And like, that's still in the movie. He opens, you know, he wakes up, he eats the cereal, he opens the shade. Something personal transcends, but also like, to what you were saying, like an aspiring screenwriter said to me, like, well, I write like Mayor of Easttown kind of stories. Like, how can I, you know, incorporate a high concept? I'm like, the difference is those have to be an A, like a grade A. Like, they have to be great. I remember reading Brad Inglesby's first script. It was like, it sold. Leonardo DiCaprio, I think, went out with it. It was this big splashy sale. Of course, everybody wanted to read it, and it was beautiful. The dialogue was just seemed so like fully developed. It really felt like a voice. And so, of course, you see how that script is going to propel this person and get them work and get, you know. So it's not that you should not write those movies at all, but like, it just is a little harder.
Can you talk about you said I wrote it in 3 weeks and then it went from there. So talk us through, you got the idea, you faked it to your manager, you wrote it in 3 weeks, but then what? How many drafts did you have to write? How to get on the blacklist? Like, what was what's the behind the scenes journey of Free Guy, as much as you can share?
Right. I think I remember we were working on something together like the day after it sold. And I was like,
oh my gosh. Wow, it was then? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I vaguely remember you selling something. I had no idea it was this.
It was literally 5 years ago in August. I wrote it. You know, I probably sent my manager, I trust a lot. And that's another kind of component of this, you know, is like having somebody in your life you could bounce, because you may feel like you may wake up and like, this is the idea. And I've had many of those, and my manager's like, no. That's not right. That doesn't sell. You know, I've read 50 of those scripts. Like, so, okay, you put them on the wayside. But, you know, so I pitched him. He was like, this is a great idea. I sent him the first 40 pages, which, you know, just kind of testing it out. And I remember he like got on the phone with him and he was like, okay, well, so this one, he like paused. I'm like, this one what? This one is horrible. Like, this one we need to start with. He's like, this one is special. And like, I knew it was good. And he had a couple of notes. I got excited, quickly finished it. He worked, it was like an easy draft or two with him. And then, they try to attach producers. He tries to attach talent, you know, my agents.
So your manager did that. Your manager tried to package it up for you.
Yeah, with my agents. Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh, with your agent. Okay.
Yeah.
Before you even took it to market, before any of that, there was a whole strategy around that.
Yeah,
right?
They try. And then, by the way, the first person to pass on it was Sean Levy, who directed it. The nice. Very first pass. He said so much in interviews. So they try, you know, they go through their network of people they know, people who would be good for it. We didn't attach anybody, but like, it was when it officially went out, quote unquote, it was one of those dream weekends when like people were emailing, everybody was excited. On Monday, I sat down with like, you know, top five dream filmmaker who like sat me on their couch and was like, I want to do this. And like a big actor, I mean, it was amazing. It was this, I was walking around the Universal, they're pitching me. We choose us. That never happens to a screenwriter. And then on Tuesday, Donald Trump was elected president. And then on Wednesday, like the town was like a nuclear bomb went off. It was just, everything got very quiet. And it was like, hey, so all those people. But there were like one or two that were still excited about it. The producer, Sarah Schechter, she like called me and was like, Vox is taking chances. They're making these movies. You should go with them. Emma Watts and Mikey Ireland, they believed in it, so I went. And then it was in, you know, development. I did a draft of the studio. Some interesting talent was circling, but then Ryan Reynolds, like a year and a half later, I got an email. Are you sitting down? Ryan Reynolds loves your script. He's in. Awesome. I never let myself believe anything, but he was.
I think was off. Part of the screenwriter's credo is nothing is real.
Oh, just, no.
Nothing is real. When is it even real? Never. Yeah.
I won't ever let myself indulge that, like, until, like, literally, you know.
The movie is in theaters now. I feel like it's real, right? Mostly? Well,
it is. I mean, that this year is because it was supposed to come out last summer. And I was like, I mean, I saw the, you know, a first cut 2 years ago, and then it was supposed to come out last summer. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, then it's Christmas. Oh, then it's spring. And I'm just, and eventually I'm like, is this a movie? I mean, am I being pumped? Like, do they even make this? Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was crazy. Wait. Yeah.
It's a 5-year journey for an overnight sensation, right?
Right.
That's about right. That is about right. Yeah. Yeah, that's about right.
I think this is really, it's helpful for me to hear, knowing that I was there when this sold. Like, I barely remember 5 years ago, right? Like, oh, right. Like, it takes that long. And then, like, the world sometimes conspires against you to make it not real. Like, you have so little control about, you know, international events, national event, like, just the world and things that happen. So it is a long, long haul.
Right.
It's a long haul.
And you can only control the work, really. I mean, that is the beauty of being a screenwriter and of having your own ideas. Like, my wife is a costume designer. She can't just go around costume designing things. Like, there has to be a film in production. You can create. You can create something out of the ether and make, you know, and put it into the world. Like, you have that power. And that's the only power, I feel like.
Yeah, I think too, one other thing I wanted to say when I was listening to you talk, like, I have this idea of who I am as a writer, right? Like, the things I've written a feature that's based on a book. It's very indie, right? The pilot that I just wrote earlier, I don't know, in April, right? It's very, you know, cable, you know, little niche. And then I'm like, what if I sat down and tried to come up with a bunch of high concept feature ideas? Right? I'm funny on the page. I know how to write good dialogue. Like, what if I did? Like, what would that look like in my voice? And what if, like you, like, what is my wish fulfillment right now? Because yes, I feel incredibly stuck at the moment. You know, like, what does that look like for me? And I just sort of, like, it's an interesting challenge to sort of push out of, because it's what we're doing, right? You created a new narrative about your life, right? What if it was this? And so what if we don't allow ourselves to, we build those gates around who we think we are as creators, but what if we don't have to live inside that gate all the time? So we'll see. It'll be an experiment, Matt. Thank you.
Right.
And it will be like, well, what if, and then it'll just be exactly what I usually write. So, you know, I burn the world down. That's usually what I write. But what if I didn't, you know, what if I wrote a story of hope that was a comedy?
Yeah. I mean, I want to see new ideas out in the world. Like, that's
5 years from now, maybe.
Right. What if?
So actually, one of our listeners had a question about Free Guy that I just want to ask. Did Ryan Reynolds and you have any collaboration on the script? Did you do drafts for him as an actor?
I did. Once he and Sean came on board, I did a draft with them. And he was as wonderful as you would want him to be. He was like, he came with, you know, great ideas. I mean, the original script, the character of a guy was a little more cynical and just kind of like, why are we putting up with this? Why do we live in this world where, you know, there's crime every 2 seconds? And his idea was like, let's pull him back and like make him happy where he is, which, you know, great writing note gives the character a further place to go. And it worked. And then he had some big ideas for, you know, three. He was just always looking, you know, how do we subvert things? He was also looking at things like from a producerial standpoint, like how do we, you know, do the same scene, but not make it, you know, $10 million. And then Sean was very interested, you know, in the motion. And, you know, there's a big, when you see the movie, there's a big, you know, there's a big, it's a rom-com on a level. There's a romance that really ends up landing. And that, you know, and Sean really, yeah, what are the emotions of the character, like ground the emotions of these characters, really make the end moment, which is like kind of a ghost moment, land. So yeah, I did a draft with them and it was a dream. And Zach Penn came on to do, he did a little pass, and this is a good thing to bring up in the show about screenwriting. Zach Penn was nothing but a mensch. He called me the day he got hired. And I've done, you know, ever since that, I've done that too, to the original author of anything I've rewritten. Like writers, and his philosophy is like, writers should show respect to other writers. And it's so true. You don't even, sometimes you don't think to do that, but like to have somebody reach out and be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. Like, you know, you want to talk about it, like making you a part of the process. Like it's important. It's important. I mean, look, I'm not talking about a script when there's, you know, 20 people on the title page and like, who knows what this was, but like there's, you know, it's a spec or there's an original author, or even if it's a book, why not call that author? You'd be doing yourself a disservice not to. So yeah, that was great. He kind of built out the real world of Free Guy in a great way. And yeah, then it was ready to go.
Awesome. We also had some industry and process questions from our listeners. Melissa asked, what's the best industry advice you've ever been given, or that you've given? You're a mentor, so perhaps you give great industry advice, or what's advice you find yourself giving all the time to people?
I mean, definitely that I definitely give my screenwriter friends is like, get the first draft out on the page. Like that has definitely been the work. Like as I get, you know, as I grow as a writer, the work is definitely like just getting it out of your head. You know, perfection is the enemy of good, right? Is that the saying? And it's the advice I need to heed all the time, because like until you've got it laid out in front of you, you don't know what it is. And if you have a problem that you don't understand, even like writing it out, sketching it out, like if there's some bulky set piece, like, you know, they fight or there's a big car chase, this is kind of what happens in it. Like just to get those out, because I'm a very linear writer. Like I can't write, like I know some people write a couple scenes they like and, you know, fill in the blanks. I don't know how they do that. If something is wrong, I can't move on. So like,
so you write from beginning to end, just all the way through.
And yeah. And I'm not saying like every time you write it quickly, like it's good, but at least, you know, then you've gotten it out. Like people call it the vomit draft, whatever. You've gotten it out on the table. Now you can see what it is. Writing is rewriting. You're going to rewrite it a million times. That's where you're going to make the magic happen. But you can't do it until you've written the end. Like I literally have to go until I write the end. I literally write the end. And then that psychologically, something like the scariness of the void of the unfinished screenplay magically disappears, even though you haven't finished. But it's definitely a psychological trick. So that would be, yeah, anybody writing, just write it.
It's really good advice. Meg, what do you think of that?
Meg. I have, and I've gone back. I wrote the whole thing. I'm throwing out half of it. And now I'm going back. Yeah, trust me. I know. But honestly, that's where we're getting. I did. I called my manager and I was like, ah! And he was like, just write your version. You're listening to all the voices. They're up in your head. You guys just write your version that you like. And that's going into the studio, because you also can get a little bit submerged in the needs that are coming at you of what they want this movie to be, right? And this producer wants this piece and the director needs that and the executive wants this. And it can get a little like, I find it can get overwhelming. I don't know, you know, Matt, have you ever found that you kind of lose your way in terms of like, why did I even write this to begin with? Like, why did I like this idea? Or needing to please the people who are giving you notes. Like, how do you handle that process of getting notes? Like, let's say you get a note that you've tried it, it doesn't work, or is it you or is it the idea? Like, how do you navigate that?
Ooh, yeah, that's all of the above. I've had all those feelings. It could be like even in early meetings talking about talking about it, somebody could throw out something random in a room and that voice, that person wants, airplane chase. Like, I got to put in this airplane chase. How am I going to put it in to please this person? And like, you know, that person will probably be the first to say like, this airplane chase doesn't work. Like when they get the final thing, this thing you've like obsessed for and try to make work for this imaginary voice that, you know, the guy doesn't even remember saying, like, just like derailed mm-hmm. you. And I do find the things that I obsess over while writing are usually things that nobody else cares about. It's like something, it almost is a universal thing. Like the thing I'm just like, I need to get right. I mean, nobody even notices it, which is maybe why, you know, if you make it work, that's probably, maybe you've right. done your job, but.
It is yeah. true. I mean, I find that's also like, I'm trying to give myself advice right now, but that's also how you get Band-Aid monsters, right? Because you're trying to put this person in for this and they want you to fix that. So I'll just change that in that scene. And then as an executive, when I would get those scripts, I could tell I was reading a Band-Aid monster because they've just noodled around to try to get all the notes from all these people in. And that's when you do have to, like my manager, give the advice. What do you like? What do you think works? And it's such a balance though, isn't it? Because you still have to take the notes.
Absolutely.
You still have to take the notes. Like, you know, another question we had from a listener was about, you know, have you ever been pitched an idea from a studio that either you took it on and you're halfway through and thinking, crap, this idea doesn't actually work, or you have to tell the studio or whoever it is that the idea doesn't work? Or do you always kind of know and suss it out before you take that on?
I mean, I've hit snags and big, I've taken on assignments and like hitting the snag halfway through and then, oh, what have I done? I feel like I've gone through all of them. I mean, yeah, one was a time travel movie that had a lot of things going on and it was tough. But I've never gotten to the point where I'm like, I need to give back this money. Like, this is you.
Haven't gotten to that point.
No.
Well, here's that same question, but one would be like an open writing assignment, so there's where you get hired to do it, right? You've pitched, you're engaged, you're halfway through it. You have to figure it out. You have to fix it, right? You're being paid. It's a job. But what if it's you're pitching on something and you get halfway through it and you're like, oh God, I'm not the right person for this, or this just isn't working.
Yeah, then I just back out of it. Yeah, I mean, that pitching, you know, I don't think anybody, hey, look, I couldn't crack this. There was a seed of an idea there. No one, at that point, if you haven't wasted a lot of people's time, they wouldn't care. But like, I just realized there was one time I pitched an idea that I liked, a first take of an idea that I really liked. I got the job. I got in and first day they were just like, you know, I think somebody else had become involved and they're like, we don't want it to be that. You're hired still. We want it to be this other thing. And I was like, okay. Like, and I went with their version and their version didn't work. Like it was wrong. And like the thing that got me excited about it wasn't even a part of that version. It wasn't horrible, but that's when it's been tricky.
I find that there's the bonus to being first writer in, of course. We can guess the bonuses of being first writer in. First of all, you get credit for all that IP stuff. Like, I mean, there's WGA bonuses to being the first writer in and you get to build it and hopefully be the only writer. That's still a possibility, you know, but I also find that sometimes being the first writer in, you have to show them that their ideas don't work by them not working. You know what I mean? Because sometimes I'm saying to them verbally, I'm not sure that'll work because of this, so I'm going to try that. And then they just pitch it again.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they haven't seen it, or
right.
or they'll pitch back, well, in the IP does this. And you're like, I know, but that's not a movie. And it's almost like you have to show them it doesn't work. I think sometimes you have to, and that's what, you know, it's tricky because you don't want to turn in a script to a studio that doesn't work. And yet you might have to show them, look, we tried it. It doesn't work. So now can we move on? And I often think the second writer gets to be the genius who walks in now that everybody knows it doesn't work and goes, let me explain to you why this doesn't work. And they're, you know what I mean? Some of you are like, shit, that's kind of what I was pitching from the, okay.
Right.
Right. Like it's.
That's, I hate that second writer. I mean, I love to be that second writer. Yeah.
Right. Because the second writer is always so the genius.
Easier, yeah.
Yeah. It's going to fix everything because they're not kind of weighted down with either the IP or what everybody thought when they bought the project. Or you get the situation where they bought this project and kind of what you're describing, this executive thought it was this movie, but their boss thinks it's this movie. And you're like, oh my God, you guys aren't even on the same page. It can be tricky.
Right. Yeah. I've had to give people their bad ideas. And you know, if they're, you know, a good enough producer, they'll be like, I know I told you to do this. Like, and yeah, it doesn't work. And another thing I found is like studio notes is like, they'll give you notes that, you know, I'll like, I'm the first one to kill my darlings. And I'll like, to make it work, I will reconstruct huge parts of the script when maybe that wasn't necessarily. Maybe like a lot of notes are sometimes more nuanced. You don't have to be dress. Like when you talk about Band-Aid fixes, like, yeah, there's nothing worse than reading somebody else's script and seeing where they clearly just jam these things and you don't want to have that in any kind of assignment. So, and usually, yeah, you just need to be a little more nuanced probably than you think.
I think that the overall thing that we just keep talking about on the show, right, is you have to learn by doing. And even then, you're still sort of, you're still just sort of, every opportunity is a new opportunity to learn something, right? There is no code you crack. You know, you learn, okay, don't do that. Okay, do this. But it doesn't always work in every situation. There's no guarantees. Nothing is real. Yay, being a TV writer. Yay, being a film writer. Right? It's like, it's hard. You know, that's everything.
I love going and being on panels because always every panelist walks off and goes, yeah, right. Shit, I forgot that in my script. Like, even though they're on the panel talking about how to be a writer, you were like, fuck, I'm not doing that. I forgot that part. Like, it's just because it's so kind of ginormous what you're trying to do, right? It should, in the end, like any great art, look super simple, right? Right. But actually to get to that simplicity is so, it's just a lot of work, right? You know, it's even to get, when you talk about high concept ideas, finding that high concept idea that you can say in a line, or like when your manager had that, you had that wonderful day that he's like, this is special, which I think we all live for. Mm-hmm. I live for someone saying, this is a movie. You're like, whoa, that is the brass ring. To get to that are a lot of misfires. And I think that's a lot of
special. This is a movie. I have a few notes. Right.
Well, there's always notes. I mean, just come on. They're gonna, I told you my friend at the premiere of her movie got notes from the distributor at the premiere party. Like, I mean, there's always notes.
Yeah.
He was taking the movie back and cutting it. So like, there's always notes, but like, I just think that sometimes emerging writers think that you write a script a couple of times and it's done. And it's like, no, you're going to write that script many times to get to the next script, which you're going to write many times to get to the next script, to write many times to get to that high concept idea. Cause there is, like, you're right, Lorian, like it always is learning, but at the same time, you're gathering tools. Like Matt, you have a toolbox so that when you took this personal idea of the repetitiveness of your life, and then you had this oddball, wonderful thought as you're walking around, your brain knows how, because it's written so many scripts. It's gone through this so many times. You knew that's an idea. I know how to do that. Like you do need to do all this work to get the tools in the toolbox. You do.
Absolutely. I mean, very occasionally I've had friends who, like, you know, had very big success early on and then they don't know how to repeat it. Like, it takes them a couple of years to catch up. Like, they're like, how do I do that again? Like that, yeah, you're going to have to do the work one way or another. You definitely can't count on getting lucky. Like, it's, yeah, you have to do this because it's pouring out of every pore. You want to do this. Like, yeah, it took so many years of a day job working nights and weekends to even get to the first step. And I didn't ever even feel like I was at that first step. It's still, I still don't.
And you're mentoring too, which we think is so admirable. Have you ever mentored a writer like directly with their work, or is it more general? And by that, I mean, sometimes when I'm mentoring and I'm reading their work and giving notes, or sometimes when I was teaching, when you get it back, you're like, well, they heard 10% of that, which I understand because their brain is frying and they don't even have the experience to maybe understand what you're saying. They haven't written it. Like, do you find that, or have you, or do you stay more kind of general screenwriting questions?
No. I definitely help people with their work. I worked for Imagine Impact, where I literally was working with this one writing team and another guy, like to develop their screenplay. And being a screenwriter is kind of a meditation and eating shit. Someone told me, like, everybody is always, I hope I'm not allowed to curse, everybody is always fighting material. It is the nature of the beast. Producer, if he loves your script, to make it his own, the producer has notes. A director, to make it their own, they're going to have notes. The actor, who's going to have to put themselves out there and sell this stuff, they're going to have to make it their own. So everybody is constantly fighting the material. And in order to be okay, you have to be, I mean, you could talk about, you know, the self-loathing of being a screenwriter, but you have to be okay with like putting your baby out in the world and taking notes and kind of killing your darlings and being okay with that. Like, I don't care where you are in the world. You know, it's not perfect. It probably can always, you know, be better. So you at least have to see, you at least have to try. You, as a writer, you have the thing that you already have. If you're like, if I'm a writer, I'm giving it to somebody to get notes. Like, you already have the thing you gave them, so you're good. But like, here, especially if it's somebody who knows what they're doing, yeah, hear what they have to say, like blow up stuff, see what that looks like. You can always go back to the thing, and most likely, and this, even if it's a producer whose notes you don't agree with, you're gonna put your own vitamins into that, no matter what it is. So I would say, as a writer who's getting mentored, be open.
I think that's what you said about you're going to put your own vitamins in it. That's really important, because you get a note, the impulse when you get mad and you think it's a bad note is just, fine, I'll just literally put what you said in it to prove to you, right? You can't do that. You have to be like, okay, what is the note and how do I make this work for this script in my voice? And, you know, like your job is not to prove them wrong. Your job is to figure out how to make it work, right? So you have to, like, again, more math, but the impulse can be, you know, fine, you fucking write it, you know, like that kind of table flipping moment that I've never experienced in my life. That's a hypothetical. But, you know, that you have to sort of, what is it, your ego, your, you know, whatever it is, you got to sort of invite that part of yourself to sit down.
And also, as somebody who's, you know, aspiring screenwriter who's asking somebody for a favor, I feel like the impulse is always like, help me, just help me get an agent. I feel like a lot of people come to me, that's really what they're saying. Like, don't give me, I'll listen to your notes, like, to get the hurdle so you could introduce me to an agent. And like, what I would tell those people is that the work is good, everything else will fall. It is all about the work. If you want to be a screenwriter, like, you have to be invested in the art of screenwriting. If you work on making your screenplay better, you will get the agent, you will get the manager, that will come. Because there's no magic thing that happens when the manager's like, okay, you're signed, like, welcome to the Hollywood rich and famous. That is nobody's
path. There's no key ever. That now you get to open all these doors and everyone is desperate to hire you. It's like,
here's Star Wars. What do you think of the next Star Wars?
Oh my God. I was talking to my teenager and I don't know how it came up. And I was like, oh my God, if somebody gave me Star Wars, I would like vomit, because the pressure to write a Star Wars movie, holy crap. Like, that would be so so hard. I mean, so exciting. And of course I would do it, but I would also, it would be a, that would be a job, right? That would be a job. Like that's, and I bring that up in terms of this idea of like, welcome to Hollywood. It's going to get harder. I need to tell you. It's also going to be awesome. And there's going to be super highs. Like the day your manager says, this is something special and Ryan Reynolds on it. And like, you're going to have those times. And that's also why we do it. And your story, like your beautiful, wonderful story that you had taking a walk is now going out into the world, all over the world. And people are enjoying it. I'll tell you that my teenager loved it. He loved it. He wants to go back a second time. So it's gone out in the world and it's being received. And all of that is great. But it's still an art. And art takes that work. It takes that dedication and that craft, which I hear from you, which is so exciting that that's what you're trying to mentor people. There was one other idea here. What question, sorry, that I want to hit before we wrap up with our three questions that we ask everybody. Do you have any kind of list or even just intuition? Like when you get an idea and you're, how do you put it through its paces? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and again, that might be too big of a question, but are there things you think about? Like I know as a producer, when I was a producer, there were questions you would use to put it through its paces. For these high concept, big ideas, is there anything you can think of that you just do intuitively?
I mean, when I'm looking for an idea, I could say that I look for like the what if ideas, wish fulfillment, an ironic hook more than anything else. I feel like some sort of ironic pairing of characters or...
So can you give us some examples of that just to dig into what an ironic hook or an ironic pairing would be?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, Lethal Weapon, that's an ironic pairing, like a guy who's about to retire and just like so over being a police officer is paired with like a young guy who's insane, you know, but, and also a great cop before, and he kind of shakes him out of his comfort zone.
What's the ironic hook for you in
Free Guy? Free Guy is, I mean, because my original idea, oh, what if you walked out and there was like power-ups in the world? Like, that's an idea. Like, I have to kind of build some sort of reason why that is. But it really is ironic. It's like kind of that rack focus. What made it ironic is like, oh, he's like the background guy. He's not even the guy playing the game. We've never really like, and the opening shot, it was the opening of the script. It almost has not changed. Is like, it starts on like this hero, like the badass guy, you know, stealing the car, doing all these great things, you know, and it tilts to like just the guy in the back. I mean, he's called Blue Shirt Guy in the movie. Like but that's how we all feel. Like that's, there's an irony in that. Like we kind of all feel like, you know, out of control in the world. And yeah, I feel like that's what makes the idea click.
And what I love about that idea is not just the irony of it, which is, guess what? We're not even going to be following the hero. We're going to be following background guy number two. It's emotional too. And it's something that we can all relate to, right? Like, so within that idea is both the emotional hook and the ironic hook, right? And that's gold, right? And I think what I also hear you saying is sometimes you just have to write it out to know if it's a good idea or not. And maybe hand it to somebody else and start getting feedback, which I know is hard. I mean, everybody's like, I don't want to waste time. And it's like, well, guess what? You're gonna, right? You're gonna do 10 arcs for one character. Okay. You know, that is the process. So that's amazing. Well, we should jump to our three questions that we ask everybody. So we make sure we have time for that before we lose you here to your...
Okay.
To your writing day. The first question we ask is, what brings you the most joy when it comes to writing?
Definitely the first draft, not necessarily of an original idea, but I definitely was working on another spec that I sold. I turned in the first draft. I was talking to my manager about it. He was giving me notes and he said something that he's like, isn't this great? It's just us doing this. And, you know, you don't have like BS studio notes. It's true. That's the fun. Like we're making something, we're putting on a show. It's all on a piece of paper or it's a digital file, but still we're doing it. So yeah. And also coming up with the Eureka idea. Like
those, that feels great. And you get so excited, you just want to leave the dinner you're at and go sit down and like jot it down.
Awesome.
That's the joy.
I love that.
All right. On the opposite side of that, what pisses you off the most about writing?
The feeling of not being, like we were talking about earlier, of not being able to figure out something that feels insurmountable. You never get over the fear of that feeling, that your self-doubt when you have that feeling, that you're just like, am I a fraud? Every writer has that feeling at some point in a project, and like, that's the worst feeling. But then the second best feeling is getting past that and figuring it out, which you will do. That's that is me, rewind
from this. Your lips to God's ears. Yes. The writing's God.
Can you send us the Matt video to remind
us
that?
I want the Matt video. Oh my God.
You have to do it. It has to be.
No, I want you to do it. I want yours.
Doesn't make, I don't believe the old me. So at least I have to be the old you.
If I did a video right now, I'd be like, just quit. Just go. Just forget it. This is just, it's over. Just go on the tour of Japan you want to do. Just go. All right. So our last, and by the way, just so everybody gets to that stage, and I will move through it, and then I'll do my own video, I swear. Okay. So the last question is, if you could be remembered for one scene you've written, which one would it be and why?
Oh, wow. It would be maybe the scene that I kind of was the spark of Free Guy, which is like, what if you put on these glasses and like you suddenly could see this world around you? And I had that scene pretty perfectly pictured in my head. It's kind of what I wrote in that first draft, and it still is in the, it is in the trailer. Yeah. And it gives me chills every time I've seen it. I've seen it like 3 or 4 times now, and so I guess that would be, I'll probably think of the real answer later today, but.
No, the scene that gives you chills, of course, that's one of them. It's still giving you chills. It's amazing. Awesome. So guys, just to our listeners, Free Guys is in theaters now. So if you feel comfortable, you should definitely go out and check it out. Be sure to also view Matt's other hits available on multiple platforms.
And thank you, Matt, for joining us today and sharing all of your wisdom with us. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And if you haven't yet, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thing, The Screenwriting Life. That is how I talk in technical terms. You're welcome, everybody.
And please do drop us a review on Amazon Podcasts. And I just want to also say thank you to Matt so much.
Thanks for having me. That was fun.
Amazing. Yeah. Super fun.
And remember to keep writing, everybody. And you are not alone.
Thanks for tuning in to The Screenwriting Life. We love our community and we want to get to know you even better. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/thescreenwritinglife or email us at thescreenwritinglife@gmail.com to have your question considered for the show. You can also suggest topics by emailing us there. Also, we'd love for you to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. Even if we don't read your review on air, trust me, we have read it, and not only does it mean the world to us, but it helps other people find the show. We've always been driven by mission and mentorship, and reviewing our show helps expand that mission. And of course, until next Sunday, happy writing.